Hello, I'm Daniel.
I'm George.
I'm Russell.
I'm Tom.
The Crooks.
Sheffield, officially 2007, but you didn't start knowing what you were doing for actually, when I say knowing what you're doing, when the current lineup and everything was just a couple of years ago, right? So we've covered that one. Now, this is the part I didn't know. I mean, obviously with Hawley and Cocker, which sounds like a really good accounting firm, doesn't it? Wouldn't you like to work for a Hawley and Cocker?
They would get nothing done.
Hawley and Cocker, could you imagine? That's the accounting firm. You've done live sessions. You've been on Jarvis's radio show. Sheffield's a legendary rock and roll town. Crooks. Where the heck is, how far is Crooks as a suburb? I don't even know that Sheffield's a big city, so it's kind of interesting that Crooks is a suburb.
Yeah, Crooks is a student suburb in the north.
So is there a big university there, or?
Yeah, University of Sheffield in the centre of town, and that's where
that's where Crooks is.
A lot of accommodation up there, so that's where we all met originally, yeah.
I think it was just when we were in Sheffield and was going out, and I think it was just because you see people at the same places, you know. It's just a common ground, but we'd all go to the same nights, and we'd always see each other at the same shows. And I think when you bond over music, it's kind of like me and George, I know, for example, have got really, really similar sort of record collections. We live in the same house, and it's almost like identical. And it's like not very often you meet someone who has that similar collection.
I didn't know until I did my research this morning about the grant. Right. And then I watched that lovely television show with your manager on it, and. But this was really fascinating to me that this happened. So I want you to talk to me a little bit about that, because I think that's the best story of all.
The grant didn't come easily. You know, I think everyone's having a tough time of it, and it was a surprise to all of us, and I think to a lot of people in the country that anybody got it, that it was even available. But it's, you know, it's been amazing for us, and we got to go on the BBC Breakfast, so our mums were finally proud of us, and yeah, it's enabled us to come back over here again, and we have been before. We've been to Austin last year, and we went to New York last year as well.
You are on a label in the UK, but tell me about the relationship with Modern Outsider and how they found you.
Yeah, it was last year we played at South by Southwest. We'd spoken to them a bit, I think, in advance and expressed an interest. But it's always the same thing, like, until people see you live, you know, they're not going to commit to something. So we played live last year at Latitude 13. They came and we got signed up, like, pretty much straight after that. And it's like, it's a great relationship. The people we want to work with, they're always kind of a similar nature, like our label in the UK. And
You chose a label that their passion for what you do is immense. They really believe in the kind of music they want to put out there, and that's unique for a label, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think for a band like ourselves, we've got by for the last five or six years just by believing in ourselves and never having anyone other than Penny or Matt or Ollie ever sort of believing in us. So to have labels like Fierce Panda and like Modern Outsider show that same belief that we have in what we do is kind of astonishing, really. It takes a little while to sink in, and you know, we're cynical Englishmen as well, so we can't sort of understand it, but it's lovely.
And but you're definitely right. Like that's the key aspect. That's what like attracted us them to us and us to them in a way. That the first, like, it's money's not at the forefront of what they do. It's passion, love for the music, and that's always got to be like the most important thing. Like
it's something that we're not fully qualified to talk about, really, because we don't know. We are shielded from the facts and figures, thankfully, but. It's such a strain on the whole infrastructure of being in a band to come to America. And we did it the first time in 2010, and we were skint for like the next year or two afterwards. Now with the support of Modern Outsider, we were talking to Chip earlier today, and it, I was saying to him that with them on board, it feels like we're not shooting in the dark when we come over here anymore. It's not like buying a lottery ticket. It feels like there's something behind us, and it's just a lot more worthwhile for us to come over, and there's more momentum. So,
how much scouting was there to get to a church in northern Italy to record? And you know, was it, and again, it's, I'm going to do the full-on NME question. Was it for the acoustics? Was it for the producer? Was it that you're religious zealots? I don't think it was the last one somehow.
I think it was maybe a sense of boredom with the whole process of the traditional format of recording records. You can get very tired of sitting in the same room day after day, you know, doing 16-hour days. And we wanted to just get out. You know, there's a real sort of feeling that we'd been sitting on these songs for a long time, and we were getting very, very restless, and we hadn't played live in a long time, so there was a little bit of that longing for the road as well. And it was Russell's idea to get up and leave the country, and we were just lucky enough that our friends, a great Italian band called the Charlestons, had an old Roman Catholic chapel that their grandfather built after World War II. And
these
things happen. Serendipitous. So it was an incredible experience. We all put on at least 2 stone with the spaghetti and gnocchi. I've not eaten Italian food in 6 months.
You have a team now. Is that pretty exciting? And are you okay with the fact that there's going to be somebody crunching cornflakes to your songs?
Absolutely. Yeah. If it pays the rent. Look, I think maybe 10 years ago there was a more cynical attitude to things like that. And I think you have people like Liam Gallagher coming out and saying it's not rock and roll if you've got these new bands with songs on adverts. But he's all very well and good saying that, but he was in an extremely privileged position. You know, if we could have been a band in the mid-90s when it was, you know, the last days of Rome, then wonderful. But it's not the case anymore, and there wouldn't be bands if it weren't for that relationship. So I've got absolutely no problem with it.
Makeovers in videos, man, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, that was the video for Play Dumb, I think. And we, as usual with videos, we had a bit of a crisis meeting the night before, and said we got to release a video, you know. And what ideas we got, brainstormed, and that was, you know, me dressing up as a woman and wandering the streets of Sheffield was just the best idea. I mean, I suggested it.
How many dates did you get?
Well, I thought I was gonna get an offer from that little elderly woman who came up, but she wasn't interested. So.
That tells you something, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What you got?
I gotta say, I was strangely enjoying myself by the end. I was really nervous to start with, but as soon as I got the wig and the dress on, I didn't want to take it off.
I think that although we did think up the idea on the hoof, it does, the concept of the video does tie into the theme of the song. I think that is we have actually thought about it a bit, but. On the other side, flip side, he did look like good as a woman. So that's all I'll say on the matter.
Someone sent a picture on Twitter of a still of George and a still of Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman with a blonde wig. And they look surprisingly similar.
I'll take it.
And it's always fascinating to me to watch people react to songs they've never heard. And so what is it like to be in a place where now you play this many gigs, this many people have now been, you know, have heard the music, and yet at best they've heard the single, right?
The best thing about playing live is when you have people responding well to the songs and singing back. So obviously they're not going to do that the first time, but fortunately by the end of this week people have been singing back just from coming to the free show. So like that gives you some confidence that the songs are good, that people are just hearing it live, picking up on it and learn the words for the next show. That's been quite nice.
I think we've been surprised by the reactions to some of the songs, because you never know. It's we were saying yesterday, it's like a leap of faith, and these American shows have been the first time that anybody has heard some of these songs apart from the single. We've been playing quite a lot of new songs, and it's really, really, really interesting to see which ones the crowd respond to. It's usually the ones that are loudest and fastest, but
of course.
But we
kids today.
We already had in our heads the next single before we came to America, but luckily that song's been getting a good reaction as well. So
when someone comes up to you and says, "So why you?" There are how many British bands are coming to the U.S.? They find their way, they play a residency, they go to L.A., they go to New York, and they play a club there. Yeah, and I'm saying this in a serious way. What do you think when you ask, when people say about your songs and what you do as a band, what do you tell them?
I think we've got more heart than any other bands, you know. I think the list of bands that we have played with or been mates with in the last 5-6 years that have packed it in, given up, thought, you know, sod this, I'm off to work for a bank, is endless. That list is endless. And we, you know, that thought is so far away from any of our minds, even to the point where, you know, like there's the threat of eviction.
We've never made a point of caring about what anyone thinks, what about what we're doing. Like the amount of bands we've seen, like George said, who've come, they've been on the front cover of the magazines, they've had like big radio play, and then after the first album, they get dropped or they quit, they give up because it's not for them. I think we just have never cared about what other people think of us and have just written songs that we think are great and stuck to our guns. And that always, you always come through when you do that, I think.
Yeah. I think we've got quite a specific type of fan as well, which...
Oh, tell me about that. That's interesting.
It's kind of... There's a common ground between our fans, and they're not the kind of people who would jump on the bandwagon, get into a band and then, like, you know, like it for a month and then like the next band, like... You don't. We don't really get.
You're actually dedicated followers. We don't. Yeah. Fashion is the
king. Yeah. Exactly. Where, you know, we get people who are. We don't get casual fans of our band. You know, like most people either love our band or have absolutely no interest in us.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs as the bread, and then you each get to pick a few songs in between by any other band, and it's 40 minutes of solid music.